Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, February 2nd, 2011. It is now about 7.01 p.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. 888-773-4496. Please make yourself available and call in. I also send us your emails anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, sutton-associates.net. In his newsletters, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. Folks, he has one called My Two Cents, which is really excellent. It's for people who want to understand what is going on, and he makes it available absolutely free of charge. Doesn't hound you, doesn't send you anything. He'll send you an email of his newsletter. I read them. And I take copious notes when I do read them. Please do. Sutton-Associates.net. Liberty Talk Radio is now available on iTunes for your listening convenience. Lastly, I also would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. This evening, we are pleased to have John Frederick Kosacki return to us. He's the author of Instead of Politics. He will educate us this evening on the concept of natural government, and I guess we're going to talk about natural law. We may also touch on the concepts of money and markets. Please join us by calling toll-free 888-773-4496. We have John on the line now. John, is
that
you?
Hi, Joe. How are you doing today?
Fine, fine. How are you?
I'm doing really good. I hear you got some weather up there now, huh?
Oh, boy. We tonight are going to get experience temperatures I don't think we've ever experienced before. They're going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 10 below zero, and the wind chill factor, who knows where it's going to be. This is Arctic temperature. It's just very unusual. In fact, we have been in the house for 2 days and have not left. This is highly unusual. And I'm from the north, and I know how to handle cold weather. But the problem is this town is really not set for it. And tonight is going to be a beauty. So we have to make sure those pipes don't freeze. Well, John, thank you very much for returning to us. And did you say you wanted to discuss the concept of natural government or natural law? I don't remember.
Natural government.
Natural. Is that the same as natural law?
In a sense, it is, yes.
Okay.
I guess it's basically the same thing, but when I talk about natural government, I'm talking about the marketplace and how the natural laws of the market govern and put discipline on the activities of people.
Okay, well, take it away and tell us all about natural government. I'm sure everyone, they're probably as curious as I am, so why don't you explain it to us?
Okay, and I'd like to encourage anyone in your audience to call in with any questions, concerns, or disagreements that they have as we proceed. My book is divided into two main sections. Natural government is the first section. Man versus state is the first half, and property and order is the second half. Each of the two halves is divided into five sections, which contains between three and seven short chapters, interspersed with cartoons by Rex May, also known as Baloo. I have over 250 cartoons in the book. The first five sections of the first half are natural government, the artifice of monopoly, The Blackened Market, The Faces of Tyranny, and The Heart of the Beast, which talks about central banking against free banking and that type of thing, and intellectual monopoly, mind control, that type of thing. The second half, Property and Order, brings into the equation the element of property, which has been misunderstood by many people, particularly on the left, as is the marketplace. The Nature of Property is the first of the five sections, which tells about what property is and how it's negated, and collectivism, how that obscures property. The second is Pollution Equals Collectivism, which shows how collectivism is the cause of pollution. Third, The Mysteries of War. The fourth is The Elements of Security. And the fifth and final section is Escape from Utopia.
So it sounds like we have a lot to talk about, John. Why don't you start from the top so we'll know exactly where we're going?
Okay. Well, let me, if it's all right with you, just read through the introduction, which kind of gives a good setting for this book for your listeners.
Okay.
Politics. Indeed, our posterity will look back at us, scratch their heads, and wonder aloud what planet we were from. Surely it couldn't really be true that we let our professional politicians convince us through their licensed media and tax-funded schools that they could solve the problems of society by confiscating property from some and giving it to others, or that they could rewrite the laws of nature and create wealth for us by printing paper money. And surely we didn't really go off to war to kill and die for them, believing that, quote, democracy, unquote, could be spread by violence. But we were misled. Professional politicians seem to have separated themselves from all humanity and found ingenious ways to overlord their fellow human beings. But now that their direct link to the gods has been severed, they're finding it increasingly difficult to justify their subjugation of the individual to the collective. In a grand finale of desperation, these now secular pharaohs have left no stone unturned, using every means at their disposal to control the thoughts and actions of their subjects.
Yeah.
Even as we enter this third millennium, many are still persuaded that man is the problem and politics the solution. In fact, some people are convinced that mankind will eliminate himself from the planet Earth, or even eliminate the planet itself. But what's even worse is that the vast majority, like a herd of lemmings over a cliff, unknowingly and energetically co-enslave themselves with political collectivism, causing every conceivable form of anti-human social suicide and its carnage, while obediently condemning the selfish. Some simply imagine that civilization can be accomplished by compulsion, so they take aim at what they are led to believe is a defective marketplace, inscribing artificial laws through a scientifically designed political system that only requires, quote, eternal vigilance, unquote. Since enlightened entrepreneurs have more humane and realistic solutions, self-seeking politicians must become even stealthier. Markets are increasingly blackened, and ignorance of enslavement to the collective becomes increasingly inevitable. Natural civilizing processes are thus restricted, prevented, and even reversed as this parasitical political class progressively and systematically criminalizes nature. So, in publishing this booklet, my goal is to expose politics for what it is, set the record straight, and thus permit mankind to see and prevent its own manipulation. In this way, each can improve his own environment and the environments of many others in the process and without sacrifice. In such spirit, I dedicate my script to man, for I have come to the realization that civilization, the process of becoming civil, is a very peaceful and natural process that is propelled by unadulterated human nature. By demonstrating the most elementary market principles, I will put the almighty state before the tribunal and jury of contemporary man. I will show that intrusive and confiscatory social artifices are not merely unnecessary, but are the most dangerous and parasitical of all inventions, and tend to provide increasingly toxic medication for the symptoms of the infirmities that they themselves create. I will do my part to nudge my fellow bearers of light to join in my quest to forever affix this imposter, this, quote, Caesar, unquote, to his own Appian cross. He can die, of course, for he is no less mortal than the rest of us, and no godlier. No one is morally required to give unto anyone who proclaims himself Caesar or anoints himself God, because nothing that is stolen by Caesar belongs to Caesar. We will be his slaves no more, for we will no longer grant him the means to compel us, nor will we be content to merely chain him down with some ingeniously designed constitution. For he has shown that he can easily slither out of its grasp once he is given the faintest glimmer of respectability. Whoever looks back with nostalgia on these evil days of the almighty state will find himself once again at risk of being ensnared by its irresistible enchantment. And that's the end of my introduction to the book.
In other words, government is not the solution. Government's the problem. Did I summarize it? I think Ronald Reagan said that, right? Back in whenever it was. Well done and well written, John. How do you see that today? Give us your examples, from your perspective. How do you see that working today?
Well, like I mentioned last time I was on your show, it's not really government that's the problem. It's the politics think that they can govern, but they cannot govern. The market does the governing. When the politicians pretend to govern, what they do is they create black markets.
Right.
And they attempt to rewrite the laws of nature and create corruption. They create more problems than they solve. So I prefer not to use the word government in a bad sense.
Right.
Government is a good thing, but it's not something that politicians do. It's something that they claim to do, and it's so ingrained in our minds that the government to do something. But that's not really that's a misnomer. That's not correctly spoken.
Right. I believe you're the one that mentioned a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whenever you were on the air last, and this was profound. At least to me, it was that even if we had no central government and we took it upon ourselves to do things, we are in fact self-governing, and there's always a government. Self-government is a form of government, and I never thought of it that way. And you're absolutely correct. So when we say government, we shouldn't use the word government, because that means even we're condemning even self-government, which we don't intend to do. Excuse me. We intend to talk about those people in office who are not us, who are manipulating the natural way things are done to their advantage, you know, at our expense. Did I say that sort of right, or where am I?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay.
The first section, natural government, starts with society is made up of individuals. Society is made up of individuals. When you have the state, when you have politicians, they don't like the concept of individuals. By their nature, politicians want everything grouped so that it can be controlled. Tribes are made up of individuals, but when the politicians succeed at making those individuals, that group of individuals, into an organism, they have succeeded in making it into a tribe and making it into something that's much more for them controllable, something that can be manipulated, something that can be used to fight wars and that type of thing.
You know, what I find intriguing is the fact that people have been studying history. Many people study history every year. People become history majors, and we all take history. And we see what governments have done. Do you think after thousands of years of studying history that we would come to the conclusion and say there is something wrong with this paradigm. But people who even study history support it and never condemn it. I mean, very rarely. And I don't understand how you can study history and not come to the conclusion that many of our problems, the man-made problems, come from government. And like I tell people, if you want to know the core problem of any problem that we have here in America today, the answer is government. And you can always trace it back, and you can always do that. I've never failed not to do that. And yet, when we study history, we take government as a separate entity, and we almost idolize it, and we trace it back, and we see what governments have done. Can you talk to that, John? Why am I losing my mind in that regard?
Well, people are conditioned. That's what politicians do, is they condition people to think that way, to think so that they can be easily controlled. I definitely agree with that. I think that it's really holding on by a thread. It has to be just holding on by a thread, and it should just take a gust of wind or a breath of fresh air to finally get people to hit themselves on the head and say, wait a minute, you know, what's going on? Like I say, what were we thinking? What planet were we from?
Yes,
how could this have happened?
You know, because
when you look back in history, you see the same thing. You see, you know, how could people have believed that? How could people have been manipulated in that way? But and it's still happening today. But it seems, you know, with the information revolution, it's gonna pop somewhere. It's gonna have to just fizzle away and disappear.
You know, I hear people that I know and like very much, who'll say something like, you know, I'm so proud of my son, he's serving in Iraq, or he's serving in Afghanistan. Or someone says, oh, my grandson, or my great-great-grandson is, or whatever the case may be. And I so much want to say, have you ever thought that through, that we have to say, you know, support our troops, but that's a great line. But what does that mean? How do we mindlessly, you know, join an organization that's going to ask us to kill people that we don't even know, but by their orders, we push a button or pull a trigger, kill people, and somehow we have to be proud of that. And no one has come to that yet. No one has come to that realization that there's something wrong. That's part of the government paradigm. No one's come even close to even discussing that, because it's sacrosanct. You can't touch that.
Yeah, when people are go through boot camp, they get desensitized to violence, to that type of thing. The other day I was looking at some other Wikipedia videos about what happened in Iraq. I don't know if you've seen those at all.
No, I haven't.
But Apache helicopters, you could hear the narration, and they had listed underneath the narration of what they were saying, and they were basically treating it like a video game.
Right.
You know, they were looking for an excuse for these people. That, you know, they were, there was a couple of photographers, and there's a group of about 12 people walking along. They weren't threatening anybody. One of them happened to be carrying a gun, but he wasn't using the gun, and because he had a gun, and they saw one gun, and they said, well, they got five people with AK-47s, but two of them were photographers, Reuters photographers, just, you know, shooting pictures, and in cold blood, they started, you know, looking for an excuse, and because they saw that one gun, they took out that whole group of people, and then a van came to rescue one of the photographers, and a couple of kids were in the van. I don't know if you heard about that, too.
Oh, I've seen some of those, John, and they're horrific. I saw one where they were, they had cornered a group of people, and they were just women and very small children, and the head of the group, you know, of the, you know, the little military group that was there, that was looking for whomever, called back and said, you know, to the command post or whatever, said, there's no no one here but some, you know, women and infants. And they said, complete your mission. And the guy repeated, he said, there's no one here. There's just these women. Complete. In other words, kill them. Now, I what I don't understand is why we haven't at all come to the realization that there's something wrong with that. I mean, some people say, well, you know, I'm against the war, but we haven't addressed that, the inhumanity of the whole thing. You know, and even people who are against the war say, well, I support my troops, and they have no idea what they're saying. What do you mean by you support your troops? Because I want them to come home and be with their family and be productive and have a good life. I don't support my troops. I don't understand it.
Yeah. And I think these are videos and the information revolution, a lot of this stuff is getting out, politics. I mean, you can't come across a person and say the word politics without having a bad connotation. A politician is not, in anybody's mind, a good person. And I know there are exceptions to the rule, which is very rare, but in politics, people are by nature selfish. And in the marketplace, selfishness is a good thing because it causes people to compete against each other and come up with new products and serve customers because they're competing against each other. Right. But in politics, it will always be a bad thing. Greed will always breed corruption. And that's a huge difference.
Well, when I ran for U.S. Congress back in the year 2000, boy, it seems like a long time ago. John, I'm getting old. Anyway, I was in a debate with John Sullivan, who was the incumbent, who is still in office, and Doug Dodd. At the end of the debate, a little old lady came up to me, a very nice lady. She says, you know, I agreed with absolutely everything you said. I said, well, thank you very much. She said, but unfortunately, I cannot vote for you because I'm a Democrat. And, you know, she was a little old lady. What are you going to say? You know, I said, well, I'm awfully sorry to hear that. You know, I really wish you would. But, you know, thank you very much for, you know, telling me that. You know, whatever, you know. And I walked away and I said, well, you know, we don't outgrow that. You know, even she must have been 78 years old. We don't outgrow it. I mean, we talk that way when we're young. Or we don't get any smart. I mean, you think we would mature. And after a while, you know, realize saying, what's wrong? Where was my brain? I often say that, you know, this financial debacle that we're going through, which we keep on saying we're out of, which we're not. We're digging ourselves deeper. When it hits the fan, and everything, whatever goes the way it should go, I guess naturally, let me put it that way, someone's going to write a book. And I hope I'm alive to read this book because I want to say I was there. And they're going to say exactly what you said, John. What were these people thinking? You know, hold on a second. Let's stop for station identification and then we'll come back.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this evening we're pleased to have John Frederick Kosanke. He's the author of Instead of Politics. Join us again. He was with us about a few weeks ago. We're talking about natural government, the concept of natural government, and something most people would agree with. If you agree with, fine, call in. If you disagree, we'd love to hear from you. We're also going to talk on other concepts, probably money and markets. So give us a call, toll-free, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Folks, it's toll-free. You can't beat that.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Well, you know, I read an article that was very interesting by Stansberry, and he talked about the normalcy bias, how people think one way, and people who were on the Titanic, by the way, would not get off because they just could not believe this ship was going to sink. It was going down, but they just could not believe that they were going to die on this boat. And we do the same thing. We do the same. The Jews in Germany didn't leave Germany even after they were millions went to the ovens, and they had an opportunity to leave, but they always thought, no, it'll never happen to me. You know, it'll all work out somehow. You know, I'm a good person. I'm not causing any trouble. Bingo, to the ovens. And we take our history that way. Is there an analogy there? Is one a metaphor for the other, John?
Not one that comes to mind, but yes, it's true. People are conditioned. They will do that type of thing. And I hope it's not part of their nature. It's something that's conditioned in them. It's something that they're taught. They're so bombarded in the public schools and in licensed media with get the government to solve the problem. You know, if there's any kind of problem, we need to do something about it. We need the government to do something about it. They need to, if they would instead focus on the market and say, well, what kind of a product can we introduce that's going to solve this problem? That would work much better. I mean, the market's much more civil, humane way of solving these problems than politics.
Well, the cards are stacked against us. We can talk this. We can have a contingency agree with us, but when you come down to it, we're outnumbered tremendously. How do we solve that problem? How do we get people to actually start thinking about this? I mean, we can say, well, they got to read books, they got to do this, they got to, you know, people watch television, they watch Dancing with the Stars or whatever program is popular these days. How do we get this across? I mean, it's not happening, that's for sure.
Well, if people see the government as a monopoly, they're gonna know that it's not something that's separate from humanity. It's not some supernatural entity that can solve these problems. It's and the more it claims to be solving these problems, the more damage it does. And I think people are waking up to that. Gradually, but with the information revolution, I'm sure they'll come around. If the monopolists, the politicians, cannot censor the information that people get. What they do is they license the media, and originally when they did that, they claimed that there was a scarcity of radio frequencies, so they had to make sure the number of frequencies were allotted to the right number of people.
Right.
And by doing that, they actually decreased the number of channels that could be used. But as the number of channels of information expand, this information gets out, and the politicians cannot monopolize this information anymore. The network, radio, and TV stations, and newspapers. Well, newspapers are becoming less and less, more and more thing of the past. Less and less used. Radio stations are being replaced by internet. People are not getting their news spoon fed to them. They're deciding, you know, this is the type of news I want, and they're able to get in their mailbox in the morning the type of news that they want, the type of thing that they're interested in, not more political propaganda. So, if the politicians do not have a mouthpiece anymore, if they lose their tongue, they're also going to lose their power.
There's two edges
to the sword. There's the force of violence that they can use to suppress the people, and there's the bottlenecking of information so that they can tell them what they want to tell them.
Do you think the internet's going to be the crowning blow to the old guard?
I believe so. When radio first came out, for a short time. It became an alternate source of news from the newspapers and magazines of the day. But quickly the FCC monopolized it. But it's much more hard, much more difficult for the politicians to control the internet. They're trying to get legislation now for like a fair internet type of fairness doctrine. You know, where they want to assure competition. Of course, everything they do is going to prevent competition and create monopolies. But I think they're going to have a lot more trouble with the internet, with trying to control the internet. At least I hope so.
Yeah. What do you think would be the reaction of people if the internet was somehow restricted here in the United States?
Well, if the government were capable of doing it, then you know, there would be outbursts. People would be unhappy about it. But then you know, if the government were actually able to do it, then they would once again have their monopoly over information. And they would be able to spoon feed everybody the type of things that they want them to believe. Hopefully, I mean, if that does happen, that will definitely not be a good thing. Somewhere down the line in the future, there will be something else. But I do believe that the internet is going to bring down, and at least it started bringing down these monopolies, and you know, bringing into question the whole logic of politics.
What's your take on the situation occurring in Egypt right now?
Caused by the U.S. primarily, that whenever the big dog or the bull gets in the China shop, he tips over all the China. Whenever the U.S. government gets involved in some type of foreign program, they're going to do more damage. They did the same thing in Iran. They did the same thing in Iraq. In Egypt, the U.S. government supported Mubarak, and the gave him all kinds of money, billions of dollars, and this is a result of that. If you want to go back to the Constitution, you know, foreign aid, that's not really one of the functions of the federal government. The federal government is supposed to protect the borders
right.
through the Navy, and that's basically it. And that's the borders. That doesn't mean the Navy goes all over the world, and that certainly doesn't mean that standing armies are continue to stand in countries throughout the world. And foreign aid, you know, why should American taxpayers have to support all these other countries? If you want to, if you teach a man how to fish, you give a man a fish, he'll be hungry, he'll be full for a day. Teach him how to fish, he'll I don't know how the saying goes, but he'll he'll have.
Nice
lifetime, you know, the knowledge. If they get knowledge, if you have open trade, communication, you get you know, freedom of communication between people of different countries. You get free trade, freedom of speech. People can interact without this tribalism, without this state, nation state, without politics. You have peace. Wherever you have politics, you're going to have war. You're going to have crises. And no politician likes to let any crisis go unmilked.
Right. Well, you know, Gerald Celente predicted that this was going to – no, he doesn't predict. I guess he forecasted. He said – and I like his statement. He said that, you know, he's a trends forecaster. And he said when people lose everything and they have nothing else to lose, they lose it. He said, you're going to see this, you know, crop up in some of the countries, you know, and he named a few. And he was right on. To him today, in fact, I read something from one of his newsletters that said, yeah, this is not isolated to Egypt. This is really no surprise. And this will spread not only to the Arabian area, also Eastern Europe. And he said, as people get shafted because they were promised certain pensions, they were promised all the stuff from governments, which governments couldn't provide forever, now governments, instead of providing these, they're taking more away, increasing taxes, creating more unemployment. And they said, you know, you're going to see this spread. Do you have any opinion of that, on that subject?
Yeah, well, that's what happens when politicians get involved. As far as what the U.S. government could do, I mean, the best thing for them to do is absolutely nothing. If they take sides with the people who are in the streets, they're going to make enemies with Mubarak and with the people that are supporting him. If they take his side, they're going to make enemies with the people. I mean, the politicians just need to get a life.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, how do we get this out? How do we get people, how do we change our mindset, from, government is there, we need government for everything, to government is the problem. We need to basically have a very, very limited government, and the power should be with the people, and there should be most self-government. How do we get from point A to point B? I guess that's my point, and my frustration as well.
Well, we just need to tell the people and tell them again, so that they, eventually at some point they're gonna listen. At some point they're gonna realize, and especially if it's something that concerns them, need to see something that concerns them specifically. If they can be shown how their tax dollars go out and never come back, if they can be shown that all of these layers of politics is not just hurting the big companies with lots of money, it's hurting everybody, especially the little guy down on the bottom, you and me. If they can be shown that, then out of self-interest, they're gonna say, wait a minute, stop. I am a slave. I guess I'm a slave. I didn't realize that I was a slave. So let's take the noose off. Let's take the chains off. And that would be the way to get people to listen, is to show them that they are slaves. And that's what I try to do with this book. Show them that they are being enslaved by politics.
John, I applaud your efforts, but for some reason I have to say I don't agree. Because whenever you show someone who has an ingrained belief system the truth, they reject it and they consider you a nutcake. That's the beauty of taking young kids and placing them in government schools and teaching them a certain side of history. And after a while, it's like getting, you want to get young kids in certain religions because they have to believe everything, because there's a man in a colored outfit with a funny looking hat and stuff like that, and he says all these things and he's next to God and the whole bit, and then for the rest of their life they believe that this one religion, this one thing that they would have been told, that is the absolute truth and everything else is incorrect. It takes an absolute epiphany, and there are very, very few people who break from that. So I contend that ain't going to happen, John. Ain't ever going to happen. I mean, you may get a convert here and there, but it would be absolutely insignificant. I don't even talk about this stuff anymore, because even when people are polite and yesing me to death and smiling and all that, I know what they know what they're thinking. They're going, oh boy, this guy's a real nutcake. No matter what you say, no matter how eloquently you say it. And we have a caller on the line. Let's see what the caller has to say. Caller, you're on the air. You have a comment, please.
Yes, I do. Joe, this is Jim. By the way, I called a few minutes ago, and I was waiting for five to 8 minutes to get connected, and I think what I failed to do is hit one when it says, do you want to speak to the...
That is correct, because we have people calling in, and they're listening to the broadcast live on their phone. And if we hit the one, we put them on the air.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, no, I don't want to be on the air. They hang up.
Yeah, after wondering why I was screaming your name, and after not being connected, I said, maybe I need to try this again. So anyway,
yeah, a lot of people scream my name.
Good to be on, and I enjoy your guest, John. I think it's a very interesting interesting perspective and message that you're trying to convey. I agree with your positions and your statement, and plan to read your book and learn more about this natural government. But my question to you is, obviously, this is something that is you know, that you're passionate about, that is that you feel very is very compelling to you. Did you have a particular person or event that, you know, is kind of the inspiration and motive for you to pursue this interest and write this book? And then also, the follow-up question would be, with all of the, we're all overwhelmed with different media sources, mainstream and alternative. Do you have one or two favorite sources that you like to stay, you know, stay informed on world and current events?
Okay. Well, it was actually a long process writing this book. I began it in 1984. It was originally I was originally going to put together a Christian's Guide to Information Sources. I had gone through. I was born. I was baptized Lutheran. I came from a family with a Lutheran pastor as a father. My mother was the daughter of a Lutheran pastor. A very religious upbringing. And I studied for the teaching ministry, and at one point I questioned the doctrines that I was being taught. That when one of the instructors said to me, or said to the class, he said, "Why are you in this class? What's the reason that you're here?" And one of the students in front of me raised her hand, and she said, "To find out what we believe." And that really was, for me, I guess, a turning point, because how can you not know what you believe?
Right, right, right.
And
interesting.
Yeah, and I began putting this book together. I became involved in politics. I did some campaigning, that type of thing. And in the process of gleaning this information for this guide, I made lots of discoveries. And, you know, originally it was more toward the right side, and I began to become much more libertarian in my viewpoint, and ultimately anarcho-capitalist, as it's called. But the word anarchy can be very confusing, so I don't like to use that word, because it's not the absence of government; it's the absence of politics. The market is itself a form of government, but.
Do you support the view that the Democrats and Republicans are one big club, that it's a two-headed monster?
Yes, they're actually two different wings of the bird, I guess you could say.
Right.
One bird with two wings. The right. I don't know if you're familiar with the Nolan chart, but the right tends to support economic liberties and. To restrict personal liberties, and the left tends to support personal liberties and restrict economic liberties. So,
I think there's some subtle differences that you've just outlined. But my point is that when it's all said and done, that there's little difference as far as our foreign policy and rule of law, and in other words, a lot of people are saying it's, you know, two sides of the same coin, and I think
sure.
There are some subtle differences. But I wondered how you felt about that perspective.
Yeah, on the on the campaigning level, the right will talk about economic liberties. They won't talk
right.
about risk. Personally, they'll talk about economic liberties, and the left will talk about personal liberties. But when they actually in practice become these politicians, there's very little difference. Obama's extending basically all of the programs of Bush with the Democratic flavor. The war in Iraq is continuing. Afghanistan, there's been more deaths since
right.
Obama.
That's my point. When they all get elected, they all step in line and follow the status quo, the establishment, the corporate the doctrines. And that you're right. Subtly, they'll campaign and make all sorts of promises that lean towards those stereotypical differences that you mentioned. But I'm glad that you feel like in the end, it's pretty disillusioning.
It is. Mm-hmm. And as far as information,
yeah, I was curious. I continue to seek and try to limit. There's only so much time to absorb. And I just was curious if you've got a favorite website or author or source that you rely on to try to learn the truth and keep current.
Okay, I'm trying to remember now. I get my I usually get my news in the morning.
From where? That's a good question. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from North Carolina.
Oh, from North Carolina. Okay, nice part of the country.
Let's see.
My dad was a Kentucky boy, and I grew up in Ohio. I'm out here in Oklahoma now, but I've traveled through North Carolina several times.
Okay. See if I can.
Obviously, I mean, you're a knowledgeable person, so you've acquired. So you learn from someone.
Yes, I've done a lot of research. One of the books that really got me thinking about anarcho-capitalism was The Market for Liberty by Morris and Linda Tannehill.
Okay.
And that was kind of a Randian type of a look at a society without politics, and they kind of introduced me to the concept of how insurance companies and defense companies, security companies, provide on a competitive basis can provide the services that traditional politics usually has been providing or claiming to provide over the years, but that as an insurance company has in its best interest the service to its customers, and especially if it's competing against other insurance companies, they're going to show the faults of their competitors. They're going to show how their customers actually receive good service, where their claims, all their losses and damages are handled quickly, humanely, and that they are compensated fully for their losses and damages, and not it's completely the opposite of what you see with monopolized defense, monopolized insurance, where the where you have the opposite. You have offensive, they become offensive.
If you've ever had to deal at any kind of government office over something, whether it be motor vehicles or whatever, I'm totally with you.
Well,
I'm going to hang up the phone, but
Jim.
I've enjoyed this conversation, and I like the journey you've been on is interesting, and I'll have to do more reading. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much for calling, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
John,
bye.
Do you see any connection or parallel, I should say, with the indoctrination of our children in politics and indoctrinating our children in religion?
Yes, there are a lot of parallels. But the politicians do the same thing that the ancient pharaohs did in the past. They will what Egypt did. That was at the same time that the pharaoh was God and religious leader and king. He was all of it at the same time. So originally they were the same thing. Today the politics is quote secularized, unquote, and it claims not to be a religion, but it really is. Statetolatry, the worship of the state, is exactly what it is. So it is a religion, yes.
Yeah. So I guess then you can infer that if there is a parallel, is there something wrong with the way we indoctrinate our children or even suggest to our children a particular form or religion?
Well, yes. No religion is completely correct. I think when you look at Jesus, what he did, he was essentially a libertarian. He went against the state. He went against the church, because he taught about the law. I cover that a little bit in my book.
Okay.
He said about the lawmakers, you're a brood of vipers. You put all these obstacles in people's paths, and you don't lift a finger to help them. He came out pretty strong against the established state type of religion and against the state itself. And I think when he talked about giving unto Caesar, they were trying to trap him. They were trying to get him to say, okay, you can, they said, tell us plainly, one way or the other, should we pay taxes or not? Well, if he would have said, yeah, you should pay taxes, he would have lost most of his disciples. If he said,
nice.
No, you shouldn't pay taxes, they would have arrested him and right then and there.
Right.
So what he did was he said, give me a coin. Whose picture's on this coin? Well, it's Caesar's. Well, then give unto Caesar what's Caesar's. And give unto God what's God's.
Right.
So anyone who believes that everything belongs to God is not required to give anything to Caesar.
Right.
And vice versa.
Right.
Caesar claimed to be God too, by the way.
Right.
And the followers of Jesus did not believe that Caesar was God.
Yeah. Well, how does this square with your own belief system? Did you have a problem with your own belief system in... developing these theories about government and whatever, did you have to go back and reflect on the way your own religious beliefs and the church that you belong to and say, wait, there could be some parallels here. I'm criticizing government, but church is sort of a government in itself. Did you ever come to that conclusion or get that far with it?
Well, yes. I do not agree with many of the things that the Lutheran Church believes. I'm still a member. I occasionally go. I think of the I don't know if you're familiar with what the Jefferson Bible. Jefferson took the pearls of what Jesus said, and he separated them from what he felt was added by the Catholic Church. And the pearls, you read the Jefferson Bible, they're basically against established religion, against the state.
Yeah.
What was I going to say here?
Did you ever have an epiphany and say, "Boom! This is not working for me."
Well, yeah, that was an epiphany sort of in itself because the Catholic Church under Constantine made the Christian Church the official religion of Rome, and that was the birth of the Catholic Church, and when he did that, it became pretty much 180 degrees from what it was originally. When Nero was persecuting the Christians and stoning them, that's when Christianity was Christianity. When it was, people that were against the establishment church, against the establishment religion. So that was the type of epiphany. Saul was from the Jewish establishment, and he essentially brought back the concept of law into the teachings of Jesus, which brought it to 180 degrees. Jesus said, when he said, "Be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven," he wasn't performing a magical act. He wasn't saying, I am forgiving your sins. He was just stating a fact.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What he was
good.
Doing was he was abolishing the law.
Right.
And that's been, you know, if okay. you look at Judeo-Christianity today, that's not the message you hear.
Okay. John, we only have about 4 more minutes. Let me leave this 4 minutes to you so that you can tell our listeners a little bit about the book that you have written, how they may acquire the book, and any other information that you want to impart to our audience.
Okay. Well, the book is available at Amazon.com or through CreateSpace. You can just go over to Amazon.com and type in Instead of Politics, and you'll get a description of the book. You can click on the book, and you can type in a word, and it'll bring up that word, any occurrence of that word in the book. You can examine the book pretty thoroughly. Say there's 250 plus cartoons in there to lighten up the topic a little bit, lighten up the subject matter a little bit. But it's very important information, and I would appreciate it if you'd buy my book.
Who did the cartoons, John?
The cartoons were written by Rex May,
okay.
Also known as Baloo. He used to do, I don't know if he still does, but he did some cartoons for the Wall Street Journal, and he gave me a real good deal on the cartoons.
Okay,
so,
great. Okay, very good, John.
He wanted to be in the book.
Well, so that's great. Well, I hope that your book and what you are doing brings us closer to where we should be and how people think. I'm not very optimistic. I contend that people will start thinking when things can't get any worse, and they do. Or people think things can't get any worse, and they really do, and then they really start looking at government. In other words, things have to fail awfully miserably, and people have to be in really bad shape to look at government and say, you know, that really doesn't work very well. And they're going to have to start taking things into their own hands. Unfortunately, I think that's the only time it happened. Just like in Egypt right now, people were totally fed up with the high unemployment and everything else that's going on there. People say, this ain't working. We want out. And unfortunately, I think, you know, I hate saying that, but I think that's when people are going to start thinking differently. Before that, they'll just keep on giving government more and more credit for what they are attempting to do to solve the problem, so to speak. But that's my 2 cents on the deal. John, thank you very much for being our guest. And folks, his book is Instead of Politics. You can get it from Amazon.com. Get the book, read the book, and then listen to our program. And we'd like you to call in with your comments, okay? John, thank you very much for being our guest this evening. I guess you're pretty warm over there, aren't you, right now? You don't have a cold front like we do.
Not too bad. It was a little bit rainy last night, but it's above freezing here.
Okay.
I'm glad I'm not up right now.
Okay, John. Thank you very much for being our guest this evening on Liberty Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Okay. Wow. That was very, very, very interesting. You know, the concept of government. That's what we should be thinking. Our own government, self-government, libertarian government. Anyway, this is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.